things that are discussed here will be relevant to the previous talk as well. So hard particles flow down inclined planes. Hard particles, the potential goes to infinity at contact and at zero otherwise, so there's no elasticity. There is no, the isostatic state has d plus 1 contacts, but if you reduce the volume a little bit, it's equivalent to reducing the particle size at constant volume. And because it's infinite, the duration of interaction has to go to zero. Okay, so is it realistic and is it useful? It's realistic if the coordination number is actually small for systems of practical interest. It's not clear that it's realistic, especially for systems like this. We do simulations on these kinds of systems. Okay, DEM simulations, 40 particles high, same code that Silbert used, and statistics are taken over the bulk, about 30 particles in diameter. And you can, in the simulation, you can look at the average coordination number, that is the number of particles that overlap simultaneously. This coordination number is to decrease as the angle of inclination increases because the flow is faster. It's also a function of the spring stiffness between two particles. Because as the stiffness increases, the contact time decreases and the coordination number decreases. And these are simulations that we did at two different coefficients of restitution. And of course, it's realistic if you're here and at high angles. It's unrealistic if you're low. So the question becomes, what is a good spring stiffness for real particles? This has been a matter of debate in literature. Luckily, we recently have experiments. Although static experiments, they give us first experimental measurements of these spring stiffnesses. And the results were as follows. For rough sand particles, the contact law is actually linear due to asperities. Okay, and this is the spring stiffness. Okay. If the particles are smooth, then the contact law is Hertzian. And what you the Kn predicted is about 80% of what you get by the middle intrusivics prediction. It scales as the shear modulus times the particle diameter to the half, as it should for on the basis of dimensional analysis. So with the rough particle contact law, the 1 millimeter and 0.1 millimeter particles are here. Okay, so it's binary collision is a bad approximation here. It may be a good one here and certainly a good one here. Okay, it gets better at for the smooth particle case because then your boundaries are actually much higher. Okay, so this. A larger range where you should expect binary contacts. So you can, so it's realistic for some parameters, it's not realistic for other parameters. Is it useful? And here we will address many of the questions that came up during the previous talk. What are the minimum things you require of a self-respecting kinetic model? The first thing is that it should start to flow when the angle of inclination increases beyond a minimum value. This is usually put in as a yield stress plus a kinetic stress in most theories because in the static state, there is a relative arrangement of particles which has to be overcome for the material to yield. But how about the opposite process where the material stops flowing when the angle of inclination decreases below a minimum value? In that case, in the flowing state, there was no yield stress. Therefore, you should be able to get this minimum angle just from a kinetic stress alone. So this one thing you require. These things were already introduced, so I won't say much about them. Okay. And this was also introduced, so once again, I won't say much about it. But these are the kinds of things that you should get from a kinetic framework. The procedure, you start from a microscopic model. Our microscopic models have only tangential and normal coefficients of restitution. They are designed that way so that we can make quantitative comparisons between DEM simulations, event-driven simulations, and theory. Okay, so that's the purpose. So we don't have friction here, but we do have a tangential restitution, which in most cases is 1, which means that the tangential relative velocity at contact is reversed in a collision. Okay, you get constitutive relations from kinetic theory. I don't need to introduce them. But there's this additional step here. Does the collective dynamics as the system becomes dense really do something to the to the dynamics of the system, and from that you get a constitutive relation which gives you rheology, and from the rheology one has to go to the macroscopic flow properties. In the case of simple fluids, this process was called fluid dynamics, and it developed at a stage when computers were not all pervasive, and therefore they've developed some pretty sophisticated mathematical tools in fluid mechanics. A lot of the work in granular flows was done when computers were well developed, and so one could put in the rheology into a computer and get the macroscopic properties. But I'd like to make the case that there is a lot of physics to be understood if one does this analytically. Okay, so that's the broad outline. Velocity distribution function, Professor Jenkins introduced. I won't go into the details. From the Boltzmann equation for the distribution function, one can go ahead and get conservation equations for mass, momentum, energy. Energy conservation equation contains a dissipation term. You've probably heard that a million times. The stress that we use is obtained by going to second order in the Chapman and Enskog expansion in our case. It contains quadratic order in the rate of deformation tensor also. Okay. Turns out to be important, especially for normal stress differences, which are observed but which will not be captured by a simple pressure. The only important point I want to emphasize here is that energy in this case is a non-conserved parameter that actually produces an additional length scale in the problem. Okay, if you have a system size height h, the rate of conduction of energy goes as the thermal diffusivity divided by h square. Okay? Whereas the rate of dissipation goes as the dissipation in a typical collision times the collision frequency. You balance these two out and you get a conduction length, which is the mean free path divided by 1 minus e to the half. Okay? And the physical relevance of this is the following. If the system height is small compared to the conduction length, the rate of conduction of energy is large compared to the rate of dissipation. So the system resembles a conservative system. If the height is large, then the rate of conduction of energy is small compared to the rate of dissipation. Therefore, there is a local balance between the source and dissipation of energy. In this particular system, the bulk of the flow, if h is large compared to the conduction length, there's going to be a local balance between the source and dissipation of energy. However, there are going to be corrections near the top and bottom, okay, where the length scale is of order this delta, where the conduction term becomes important. So that's an important point to keep in mind. Okay, so all of these things were derived for gases. Okay. Are they really valid for granular flows? Okay. This is a picture that you see often. For my purposes, I'll define the liquid state carefully as the one where for which you require an attractive part of the pair potential. Okay. This is relevant actually for many cases where you have electrostatic or liquid bridges as attractive interactions. But I won't consider that in the present case for a dry granular material with only repulsive interactions. So if you don't have repulsive interactions, you should have a transition from a gas to a solid, as Professor Jenkins mentioned. Okay. You infer that transition by looking at the structural order parameter in two dimensions, as Mark mentioned. Q6 is equal to 1 for hexagonal packing and it's 0 for a random packing. The three-dimensional equivalent is what is called an icosahedral order parameter, which contains Legendre polynomials of the contact line. Okay, it's equal to approximately 0.6 for FCC and HCP lattices, and it's 0 if it's random. I apologize, the figure has not come out well, but what you should see is that Q6 for an equilibrium elastic hard sphere system is 0 up to about 49%, as Jim said, and then it increases. Okay. This is the crystallization transition for hard sphere gases. What about the sheared inelastic fluid? Okay. In this case, there's a balance between the source and dissipation, so temperature is coupled to the strain rate square times some function of these dimensionless coefficients. So therefore, the state of order should depend not only upon the volume fraction, but also on these coefficients. And I show here the structural order parameter for different coefficients for two different system sizes, 256 and 500. Okay? You can see that for the larger system size, Q6 is virtually 0, okay, in the sheared state. Okay? It does show some intermittent order for the smaller system, but that's because of system size effects. If your system is sufficiently large, shear breaks order in the system, and the system continues to be in a disordered state, even at volume fractions close to 62%. Your coefficient restitution is close to 1. Okay? So what we are considering here is actually a dense fluid, and hopefully we can apply many of the things that we do in kinetic theory. There are important differences. Okay, this just shows. Okay, yeah. there are important differences. Okay? The first thing is that this is a non-equilibrium dissipative system, and the collision frequency is a function of the coefficient of restitution in a shared state. It increases as the coefficient of restitution decreases, and more importantly, it seems to diverge at a lower volume fraction than the random close packing volume fraction of 64%. Okay. This is shown more clearly in the plot of the inverse of the collision frequency versus volume fraction. This is the line for an elastic fluid, the random close packing volume fraction, the Torquato model. At 98.98 coefficient restitution, it comes pretty close to that. But when you go to 0.6, it's actually diverging at a much lower volume fraction, of the order of 0.59. Okay? So this increase in collision frequency and its divergence at a lower, you need to redefine the random close packing volume fraction as well as the collision frequency for this case. Okay? The other important effect, Mark beat me to it, is that the relative velocity distribution is not a Gaussian for shared inelastic fluids. Okay? For an elastic fluid, the relative velocity distribution between two colliding particles has to be a Gaussian simply because of equipartition of energy. Okay? And the temperature is 2 times the translational temperature of the particles. For an inelastic fluid, you can see this is the line for elastic fluids. When the coefficient restitution is 0.98, it tracks this pretty well. Okay? When the coefficient restitution comes to 0.6, you see an exponential distribution with a temperature which is much smaller than the temperature of the single particle distribution, even though the single particle distribution itself is pretty close to a Gaussian. Okay? It's virtually indistinguishable from a Gaussian. Okay? So the relative velocity distribution is actually changing, even at constant coefficient of restitution. So what we do for including the correlation effects is to actually model the relative velocity distribution level, and from this to extract out the constitutive relations. It's a little more complicated than what I said, because the relative velocity distribution is anisotropic, so you have to decompose it into spherical harmonics in the angle between the flow direction and the line joining centers, and so on. Okay, but you decompose it that way, and from that you can extract out all the stresses and the dissipation coefficients. Okay, and from that what do you get? Okay, these are the Bagnall coefficients in the x and y directions. You find that for these flows, Bxx is always almost equal to Byy, and this is the shear coefficient. DEM simulations are shown in red here for the simulations that we perform. The blue curves are the theory with correlations in them. The brown are the theory without the correlations but with the correct collision frequency in them. And they all show the same trend, but if you include correlations, you can actually get quantitative agreement. Okay, so that was for the bulk flow. Now what about the flow down an inclined plane? Okay. You know that the ratio of the stresses just from momentum balance has got to be equal to tan of the angle of inclination. In our simulations, we use a boundary condition of this form, okay, where beta is a coefficient which determines the dissipation of the boundary. If it's positive, it's dissipative. If it's negative, it's energetic. And as I said, the ratio of conduction and dissipation goes as delta square by h square in this. So in the bulk of the flow, delta by H is small. Okay, so there's a local balance between energy conduction and shear production and energy dissipation. And just by dimensional analysis, the temperature has to go as the square of the strain rate. All stresses scale as the square of the strain rate, which means that tan theta is the ratio of two Bagnall coefficients, which are only functions of volume fraction. So left side is tan theta, independent of height. That means the right side has to be independent of height. If this ratio is a monotonic function, that means that the volume fraction is independent of height. Okay, so that comes out quite easily. It's only a function of tan theta. And the Bagnall law holds, just from dimensional analysis, in the bulk of the flow. Okay. How about the cessation of flow at a finite angle? Let's look at what happens as you go towards the random close packing volume fraction. Okay. The Bagnall coefficient diverges. Okay. Stress is rho g sine theta. This has to be finite. That means that the strain rate is equal to 0. Okay. Same thing. If you look at the ratio of stresses, as you go towards the angle of close packing volume fraction, the Bagnall coefficients diverge, but the ratio is finite. Okay. And because of that, tan theta is finite. Okay. So as you go towards phi c, tan theta is finite, and gamma dot goes to 0. Okay. So the flow stops at a finite angle. Okay. However, there are problems here. Okay. The first thing is that to get a stable flow, the volume fraction has to increase, volume fraction has to decrease as the angle of inclination increases. If you get the opposite, it's not a stable flow. Okay? all constitutive relations which go only up to Navier-Stokes order predict this. Okay. But if you do an honest calculation, including Burnett order terms, you can actually get the correct sign. Okay, but the numbers are way off. Okay, these are the DM simulations. This is a Burnett order calculation, which includes the collision frequency that we used from the event-driven simulations. You can see the numbers are way off, but if you put in correlations, then these are the blue is the result. And you can get quantitative agreement in this case. Okay. Though we are not able to extend this beyond this point, okay, but the trends seem to be correct. So that was for the bulk flow. What about the boundary layers? Okay. So here you have to rescale your coordinate by the boundary layer coordinate. Okay. Have 5 minutes? Ten minutes? Okay. You have to rescale by the boundary layer coordinate. And you end up with an equation that looks something like this. Okay. This is the temperature minus the temperature in the bulk. Looks like a diffusion equation with this coefficient here. Usually the diffusion coefficient is positive, but if you go through the calculation for a granular matter, this could be positive or negative. Okay. If it's positive, then you have an exponentially decaying solution which can be matched to the bulk. If it's negative, then you have some kind of an oscillatory solution which cannot be matched to the bulk. Okay. And it turns out that both signs do exist. Okay. You can show exactly that if the volume fraction decreases as the angle of inclination increases, then you do have a boundary layer solution. If the opposite happens, there is no boundary layer solution. Okay, so all of it hangs together. Okay, as far as solutions are concerned, you can do asymptotic analysis, use matched asymptotic expansions between the bulk and the two boundary layers, and one can also get an approximate equation which can be solved to get the profiles. The asymptotic solution actually tracks the actual solutions quite well. This was for a 40-layer thickness domain with different values of this parameter beta, and you can see that the volume fraction is a constant here, and this is an energetic base, this is a dissipative base. Okay. But what happens as H decreases? Okay, what does the theory predict? This shows the temperature profile as a function of height for different values of H. Okay, at H large, you see the characteristic linear decay in the temperature. As H decreases, the temperature decreases to zero at a finite value of H. Okay, so it goes to zero at a finite value of H. Okay. That is because there is dissipation in the base. Okay, so the dissipation in the bulk is proportional to the height. The dissipation in the base is independent of height if the temperatures are constant. So as you decrease the height, at some point the generation due to shear in the bulk is not going to be sufficient to balance the dissipation of the base. At that time, the temperature has to go to zero. And you can get H top versus tan theta curves. Okay, they have different scalings for highly dissipative and slightly dissipative bases. Okay, so I'm done. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so. And
you get flow stopping at a finite thickness for both dissipative and energetic bases?
No.
Only for dissipative?
Well, I was talking about this with Thomas just the other day. I don't think the temperature goes to zero at H stop.
For the experiment.
I honestly forget what the simulations say. So we're talking about the experimental results, and in that case, it clearly doesn't go to zero at H stop.
So the particles are still agitated, but they
yes.
but they are
and then they
but they
stop
stable.
Suddenly.
Yeah, that's.
So there's not a smooth, obviously below H stop.
Yeah,
I mean, we
sure,
know
sure.
that the temperature is zero.
Yeah.
But there's no continuous transition of temperature to zero.
Okay, but in the simulations, at least you find the strain rate going to zero. It does transition at some point. But as best as we can see, that is because the system is going into a multi-body contact regime at that point. But that angle is actually very small in the simulations.
Any other questions? No? Well, if not, let's thank Kumaran again.